Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, good morning, Portland, Oregon. This is not Chuck Price. This is Kevin Stege, CPA with Baker and Coulson CPAs out in Gresham, Oregon. And today in studio, we have also Carl Jepson, our resident estate planning attorney with Carl Jepson Law. Hello, Carl.
Well, hello. Good morning. And my physical presence is, defies the thought that basically is says that my demise as a radio broadcaster has been premature.
Yes, exactly. I know what you're saying. Yes. What's that term that? The reports of your demise are
premature.
Exactly.
Yeah. Unfounded and yes. Fake news.
Radio. Yeah, fake news. Yes, your radio career. Well, very good, Carl. Well, I think we're going to have a very good show today. We definitely want to encourage callers to call in 503-417-9595, 877-733-1011. And of course, we will take your estate planning calls,
absolutely,
your tax calls. We will decline to get into guaranteeing investment returns, as usual, when Chuck is not here, or even when he is.
Although,
here.
You know, if you want to buy something, we might think about it.
No, that's true.
Yeah, you know, we don't know what it is, but we'll sell it to you.
We'll give you our opinion.
Yeah, sure.
That's right. So, today we will have a little bit of a Memorial Day flavor, since this is a Memorial Day weekend, and it's a very good time to step back and think about our country and think about those who pay the ultimate price to defend our country, which I think is has just been an amazing part of world history, the last 300 years, and what America has been and has done and what it stands for. So,
amen to that.
Yes.
There you go.
So, again, we welcome your phone calls on any tax or investment, or not investment, estate questions. And Carl, I thought I'd start off just very briefly with a question to you that I have had brought up several times when I work with my clients, not my estate clients, because that's after the fact, but my normal clients, especially the ones who are in business, who are having children, who are somewhere in their working career. The purpose of a will when you have children.
Ah.
You always hear
the
adage, you know, when you hit these major life events, to readdress your will or your other estate planning documents, particularly when you have children. Why should the will be updated? Why is that an important
thing? Well, I think that for one thing, if there's one thing that most parents would say, especially when their children are young, is if they both die in a car wreck, who's going to be the guardian for those kids and or child? And I mean, if that's not the most important question to most, parents, I mean, I don't know what it is. And it's a simple thing. You can make a nomination of a guardian, And in almost all cases, that nomination gets carried through it by the court. One of the things we don't often think about, sometimes if the parents are gone, somebody's got to be the legal guardian of that child. And so there's going to be a court decision that says, you know, this person. And the people who might naturally be thought of as the next, you know, guardian of the child may not really be the best person, and that's why, or for whatever reason, maybe the guardian that you have in mind is you know, even distant from the relatives, mm-hmm. I guess. And you know, not everybody has everybody has relatives, and they're all relative in their, and they're all relative. but I'd say that's the number one thing. And then, yeah. Of course, you want it. The other stuff is just, yeah. You know, making sure that they're, for example, if you have an estate and you have minor children and you're going to end up with a guardian, or maybe not, maybe the parent will still survive. One of them might, but you know, there might be a situation where you'd want to preserve the assets in some form of a trust, which we call a testamentary trust, which just means that it came about when the person died. And that person might be the guardian that you've selected. It might not. I've had a number of people who will make their, you know, somebody, one of their relatives, a guardian for the child. They're going to raise them. They're going to, you know, but they give the responsibility of stewarding the money, I guess you will, to somebody else. And then they have to work with the guardian to make sure that the child, that the money is used wisely as far as health, education, maintenance, and support. That
I
kind
see.
Of stuff.
So, yeah. So the will is probably the best way to address the guardianship of a child upon your demise.
I think so. Okay. I think so. It really is the best way. You can do what's called just a standalone nomination of guardian conservator, but it makes sense to do it in the will, and I'll tell you why. First of all, because if you put it in a will and there are any kind of assets to speak of, then it's much more likely that that things get done legally than informally. So that's why I think it's a good idea to do it in a will, too.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, very good. So hopefully that... I know we had some listeners, clients asking about that, and hopefully that answers their questions.
Yeah, there are lots of events that come up, but that's one of the biggest events is if you have children and you don't have a will or you don't have anything, then even though it's probably not as important in terms of asset management as it will become later on, it's certainly important in terms of the welfare of that child.
Sure. Well, here's an interesting question maybe to keep digging this rabbit hole a little deeper. If you have a single parent that has custody of the children, if that single parent were to be killed in a car wreck, uh-huh. do they get to stipulate where the children go through their will?
No, not exactly.
Okay.
Here's what happens there. The law has a strong preference for the natural parents of the legal parent, because an adoptive parent is a legal parent, mm-hmm. and has the same stature, and the child has the same stature as a born child. So it doesn't have to be different there. And so as a general rule, the surviving parent, I'm trying to call them what they are,
right.
The surviving parent of this child who doesn't have custody, but the other child dies, or the other parent dies, mm-hmm. they may or may not be a good or suitable, you know, parent or guardian. However, they're going to get the nod unless they're truly unfit. And unfit is a pretty high standard. I mean, you know, taking away someone's parental rights is one of the biggest and most costly kinds of things, and it takes a real standard, a real heavy burden of proof to show that that person is unfit. They may not be good. They may be cruddy and still be fit, if that makes any sense. Well, it may not make sense, but okay. But that's the way it works.
Well, very good. That I think that is some very good information, Carl. Well, we have a caller on the line. We have Kathy with a tax return question. Kathy, are you there?
I am.
Thank you for calling in. What's your question, Kathy?
Well, my aunt died this March, And we are wondering if we can submit a final tax return, either if it has to be a 1040 or a 1041, if we can submit that final return in 2018, or do we have to wait until 2019?
Kathy, that is a very good question and comes up every single time we have a decedent situation come into our office. The question is tough to answer. We have successfully in the past, back in the old days, if you will, altered 2017 forms because the 2018 forms are not out yet.
Right.
Altered those, prepared a tax return, knowing that there was going to be no tax liability so that the standard deductions and all that stuff, the updates to the inflation updates and all those things that happen every year, knowing those wouldn't be a factor, we were able to file those. I don't think that's a good method to do anymore. Number one, I think you should wait until 2019 to file that final 1040 for the first 3 months that the decedent was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, you'll get your 1099s to match that the IRS is they've got their big computers matching these now, and so you need to really match those pretty closely. And then also you'll more than likely be taking advantage of e-file. So you could potentially get away with it. And I shouldn't say get away. You could potentially make it work on a paper-filed altered return. I haven't done one of those in a number of years, and it was usually a circumstance that really required it or requested it for some reason, but you could give it a try and give us a call back and let us know.
Yeah, we'll see. Next year around, you know, April, we'll be listening to your call.
But, you know, okay, and would this be on an altered 1040 or, as someone suggested, a 1041 form?
It would be a 1040 for the final decedent's return. The 1041 picks up on the day after the decedent died and is for the administration of the estate, any income and expenses for the estate.
Okay, would that have to be done at the same time, or could that one be done in advance? And so there are two that have to be, both of them will have to be done, right?
Correct. The 1041 would need to be on 2018 forms also. And I highly recommend doing it in 2019 because of the tax planning that's available, the interaction between the 1040 and the 1041, getting all your expenses together on both sides, getting an understanding of the beneficiaries' tax returns and how you want to have the income taxed either at the 1040, 1041, or the beneficiaries' returns. There's a lot that goes into all of that, and I that's why I shy away from altering the forms and trying to push something through. And
sure, okay, I understand. Can I ask one additional question in regards to the beneficiaries?
Absolutely.
One of six beneficiaries is a minor, and will his part of the estate have to go into a trust?
Well, it depends in part on how much that is and what it is. If they're a minor, and let's say it's a substantial asset. Well, you can tell me.
It'll be more. More than $50,000 or $60,000.
Okay, so here's the problem with that is that if the estate planning documents, if there are estate planning documents, say so, then there would usually be a provision that says if it turns out that one of these beneficiaries is underage at the time that the person dies, then we establish a testamentary trust for them, for that person, and the trustee would then manage that money for them on their behalf, would hold on to it for their, you know, usually they say something like their health, education, maintenance, and support, and use their discretion to use that until the person reaches the age of whatever, 18, 21, you know, something like that.
Right.
And then they become a trustee, and that becomes a trust. Not everybody does that. And if you don't do that, then you have a minor who, especially with that kind of money, is a bigger amount than you could ordinarily give under what is called the Uniform Gifts to Minors Act, which essentially allows you to set up a bank account. And I forget the limits on that anymore. They may have increased those, so that's a possibility you might look into. I'd have to take a look at it again. I haven't looked at it in a long time. But Uniform Gifts to Minors, you can do without going through a guardianship process. The other thing is, though, the minor child has, you know, has parents and stuff like that, and so you don't really have to go out and hire a legal guardian. Another way would be to actually get a conservator, and that's a court, that's like a legal person who's been appointed by the court to manage this money. Sometimes, you know, sometimes they just give the money to the parents, but, you know, sometimes that's not a really good idea.
I agree.
You know, and so, I mean, the child who, the grandparent, let's say, that anticipates that they want to use this money for the grandchild's college education, a lot of times, and they, you know, then they die and it goes to the parent directly. The parent may decide that they like a boat a lot better than the child's prospects at college. You know, and so I can't imagine why, but, you know, now if they were looking for a Cobra, yeah, I can understand that. But the boat, no, that's not a good one. But so anyway, I think that if there's nobody named at this point,
there's no one named but I don't think it says, you know, if they're a minor, put it in a trust. I don't think
right.
that's that.
Right. And is this a will or is there a trust?
It is a will.
It is a will. So, are there sufficient assets, as far as you know, that may require that it be probated?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, that would be part of the process, because you're going to have when you probate that will, you give information about it. You provide a copy of the will to the court, and they also then will look at that and they'll say, oh, wait a minute. You can't really distribute that much money to a minor.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the lawyer probably is going to do that anyway. I know some people who have done probates on their own, but very few. You know, most people are a little bit daunted by the notion of trying to do a probate by themselves. And partly that's because the big part of the probate, other than managing the assets, really is the paperwork. And there's a ton of paperwork that goes with the probate, and they are very specific about what has to be in them.
Yes, I did my mother's probate alone. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, bless your heart.
Well, she didn't have a lot of money, though, and now we have to have an attorney for my aunt.
And that's, you ultimately end up saving money doing that than starting out and trying to, you know.
Right. Okay.
So that's where I would go. Go with the attorney, see what he says or she says, and then, you know, they'll look at the paperwork and figure it out. Like I said, what I would want to look at, I haven't looked at it for a while, would be, first of all, if the size of the gift, it would be allow you to do it under the Uniform Gifts to Minors Act.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I haven't done that for a while, so I don't know there's a kind of a limit as to how well that works.
Okay.
So then is it? Hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, you did. And thank you so much and have a good day.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling, Kathy. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified, and now's a good time probably to remind our listeners that this is general information, not intended, nor should it be treated as legal, investment, accounting, or other professional advice. You should consult a qualified professional advisor who has been provided with all your pertinent facts relevant to your particular situation.
Oh, that's good.
Did that feel
good,
Carl?
That's really good. Nice
yes.
job.
Yes, I think we needed to get that out, which we usually do every show, or sometimes we don't. But so I thought today on the Tax Investigator, I would talk a little bit about Social Security disability or Social Security benefits, if you will. You've heard often that it's pretty tough to get Social Security disability, which probably rightfully so. It's good that they have some pretty tight rules on that, so there's no misuses. It wasn't too long ago we had the news article of the attorney in New York who was worked for a police union or something, and he had figured out how to tell all these guys to fill out their forms in such a certain way that they could get all their disability benefits. And then lo and behold, these guys are down in Florida doing sport fishing and they're quite look disabled.
All entered in the Ironman competition.
Exactly. So, there's some misuses out there, but there's many, 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 many cases where people are entitled to these Social Security disability benefits early. But it's difficult to get, and usually the process drags on.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just a difficult process.
Yes.
It's built to sort of slow it down, I think. And what happens a lot of times, a lot of people will just say, don't even think you're going to get it for at least the first three times that you try it out.
Wow,
they submit it and then resubmit it and resubmit it and appeal it and do all this stuff. But if you're really entitled to it, you'll ultimately get it generally, and and it's worth doing. It's just a big pain in the neck. However, I think most lawyers who do that kind of work, they basically get paid out of whatever you recover, and so it's not like you're going to have a huge bill to pay, out of your own pocket immediately to make this happen. So, but I wouldn't try to do it on your own, because I know that. The way that it happens is a lot of times this thing goes before essentially a Social Security judge, if you will, and they're knowledgeable people in that issue, and if the right words aren't spoken during that hearing, then the presentation is wrong. Then you could be qualified and still miss out because you didn't present the case right. So it's very important that you get somebody who knows how to do that.
That's exactly right, Carl, and you covered a lot of good ground that I was hoping to get out. Definitely, this is an area, along with challenging your own property taxes, get somebody who knows what they're doing working for you. Like you said, they're probably paid on contingency, and for the most part, usually you get your attorney fees added to the award. So it's a good thing to do, to follow through, get somebody who knows what they're doing, and as you discussed, this may go on. You may be qualified for disability 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years back. I've seen some up to 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. And then they get this big chunk of cash, which is back pay, from the time that you started.
Exactly. And that's what I want to address is so now you have just received, and we'll use a kind of an extreme case, $100,000 of back Social Security disability. You have received it all in 1 year in a lump sum. You have attorney fees, you get this 1099 from Social Security, and you're supposed to put this on your tax return, and it's going to shoot your AGI and all of your calculations. I won't say the term I was going to say. It's going to mess them up. So, and it's going to raise your tax rate. You're going to be subject to a lot of tax on that. And typically, someone gets the form and says, well, I just got it's taxable, so I got to put it on there. Well, there's a special election. It's called the lump sum election, and it's an unusual way that you you do this, and I've done a number of them for clients. And what you do is, when you get that 1099 from Social Security, they break it out per year, what you would have received per year. And we'll say it goes back, you know, 5 years, this $100,000, and we've got $20,000 a year, roughly. We request all of those tax returns from the client. If we prepared them, we've got them. We basically get that information into our tax program, and then you enter that year's Social Security and figure out what the additional tax was on that, taxed in that year. And you do that with all of the years, and you add those up, and that's part A of the calculation. Part B is just put it all in your current year that you received it, look at the tax increase on that year, compare the two, and whichever is lower, you get to pay the tax on that. And you write in LSE, lump sum election, on the side of the Social Security, so it's taxed a certain way and all these things. So anyway, just thought we would get that out there so people know how to do that.
So that's kind of like filing an amended return for each year, kind of.
It kind of is, without having to amend them.
Yeah, without having
exactly.
to amend them. That's very, I was wondering, because, you know, doing five additional tax returns to, you know, to get a couple hundred or 500 or 1,000 or 2,500 or something bucks, you know, could be kind of a burdensome thing.
So. Absolutely right. So that's it's good for accountants. It's the full employment Act for accountants if they were to amend all those years, but it's not. So
yeah, you need that full employment act. Especially around tax season. I mean, like, you just sitting there, you know, waiting for it to happen, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Just what we want to do. So, well, we have just a couple more minutes before we go. Oh, excellent. We do have a caller. Let's take Marcia. You have a trust question. Marcia, are you there?
I actually think you're going to have to hold me over because it's a multifold. Just quick on trusts and the it used to be in the olden days where they were able to give $10,000 a year to children. Now, here's the situation. Single, no children. Is there a way to set up a trust for the nieces and great nieces and nephews and great nephews for a single person?
Sure. Sure, you bet. You know, you could do it in several different ways. You could establish, in other words, when you pass on, or you mean a lifetime trust is what you're talking about, something now.
Like, yes.
Oh,
well,
sure.
Not essentially now, but like when I were, you know.
Okay, so when you pass away, you would want to set aside some money for the niece or nephew to do whatever, you know, education or stuff. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, part of it would be, you know, yes, it could be part of your own estate planning, and it could all be in essentially one document. It could be a will, or it could be a trust, a living trust. And what you would do is you would establish a section that says, and I give this much money to, you know, niece Susie, but I give it to, if she's under such an age, we give it to her, to the trustee, the one I appoint, to manage that money and hold it and distribute it for the child's education and welfare and stuff until the child reaches a certain age at which you terminate the trust and you give whatever's left to the child. But now, again, if you wanted to keep that going for a little while, you could say, okay, and we would encourage the child to go on for, you know, higher education or professional education or training or whatever it might be. And so, you know, they can go till they, you know, finish that or whatever, and the trustee has certain discretion. You can then kind of fine tune how you want the money spent if you want to do that. Or you can just, and I think most people kind of do that, but they usually just pretty much leave it up to the discretion, and then they, you know, sometimes they'll even use a standard that says that, you know, that the trustee will deal with the child and spend the money in the way that you believe we would have had, or I would have had I survived, and that kind of thing.
So assuming, and they cannot be taxed, it would be like a trust being set up, whereas a will they'll be taxed, correct?
No, the will would, no. Neither way would they be taxed.
Okay.
Except
if they're over 21.
Yeah, even if they're doesn't matter what their age is,
okay.
even if they're, but there will be a tax if you, usually we try to have the income from the trust, if it's making substantial income, we usually like to make sure that that gets paid out. Because if you don't do that, then the trust gets taxed on the income and gets taxed at a higher rate than the individual. So you would want to have distributed at least the income of the trust generally on an annual basis to or for the benefit of the child so that they can put it on their tax return even if they have to file one, and that'll be at a lot lesser rate than the trust tax, and then you don't have to file two tax returns.
So. And I know break time's around the corner. And what about the amount of gifting per year to a niece?
The gifting has changed. It used to be $14,000, and what that is an exemption. It's no tax for any reason to anybody for a gift on an annual basis made in 1 year over, and it used to be 14. I think it just went up, didn't it? Is it still 14?
15,000.
15. Okay, so it's 15,000. And so if you have, say for example, if you're like a husband and wife, oftentimes will give, in this case, they would give 30,000, one from each, so they could give to a child. But the importance of that is not as great as it used to be because of the huge $11 million federal exemption for estate and gift tax kind of stuff. So you can give a ton of money over that $15,000 and cause no tax effect, really, for most people. I mean, you'd have to have an extraordinarily large estate before you would be starting to get taxed over
gifts. Worry about that too much.
You don't really have to worry about that. Yeah, most people don't.
And so confirming, I can give to a niece and nephew without them being taxed immensely. There's not going to be a problem with it.
Oh, yeah, or you could give it to them, say they're adults now, young adults. You could give it to them right now and they wouldn't be taxed on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for being there. I appreciate it. I've worried about this for 20 years. We couldn't do it. So.
And when I said that, Kevin was nodding yes. So I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah, good. That's good. You got a gold star.
I got people helping me out here.
Thank you. All right. Thanks so much.
Very good, Marcia. Thanks for calling. And we'll take our next break and be back with Carl Jepson and Carl's comments.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so the clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsonlaw.com.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepson.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified, and this is the time for Carl's comments. And since it's Memorial Day, I thought I'd talk a little bit about some things that sort of relate to Memorial Day. And basically, it would be, what's in your legacy? And that's, there's a commercial that says, what's in your wallet? Well, what's in your legacy? And so what's a legacy, I guess? We often talk about the legacy that we leave our children. And I think there are basically two types of legacies, or whatever you want to call them, whatever we leave our kids. And that is, the first one is what we would typically think of as a legacy, which is the material legacy, which, you know, we in our lifetime, we acquire assets and we try to be good stewards and we try to have something to pass on to our heirs and children and maybe to some charities or whatever we want to do with it. And we ultimately end up putting some kind of, most people do, put it into some kind of a plan, whether it be a simple will or an exhaustive trust or, you know, who knows. But something that writes down who's going to get what and how much and when and under what conditions and that's our legacy. That's the one that's the most common. The other kind of legacy is one that we don't usually have a written plan for. It's one of those things where it's created whether you intend to do so or not, and which is interesting. But it's a legacy that we all do. We always leave it, no matter whether we want to or not. And there's no way that you can guarantee that your intended beneficiaries actually get the benefit of this legacy, or the detriment of it, maybe, because basically the second kind of legacy is character. And so we ought to think about that just a little bit. We give this second legacy is passed on by how we live and what we say and what we do and, you know, how we live our lives and what our values are and what we beliefs are. And, you know, we can create what's called an ethical will. And I think I talked about this a while ago, mm-hmm. which is essentially a memorandum or a statement or a letter or a poem or any way to communicate things that you would want to pass on to your children to think about or things that were important in your life. Hopefully it would be a reminder of the things that you taught them, you know, about, you know, how they would like to spend their lives or what they do or those kinds of things and their values. And you can do that, but generally that's one of those things that's a one-time instance and very few people do it. It's kind of a lot of work, I think, to do it. So, but otherwise you just kind of have to figure out, so what kind of a legacy am I leaving? And I have some questions there. Again, this is the Memorial Day. You know, we memorialize those people who made maybe the ultimate sacrifice to serve our country. And so when you ask yourself what's in your second legacy, you might, you know, things like, are these things that you do have in there? You know, do you have hard work, honesty, truthfulness, fair play, justice, compassion for others, generosity, protection of the poor and helpless, self-sacrifice, humility, civility, faithfulness, respect for the law, concern for justice for all? You know, do we have those things in our lives? Do we have those? Have we passed them on to our children? Do we act on them today? So that's why in Memorial Day, those people who protect our freedoms to behave in the way we want to behave and to act in the way we want to act, I think that we owe them a debt. And we owe them a debt to use what they have given us wisely. And so I hope for this Memorial Days that you can look back at your life and what your second legacy is going to be and say, yep, I'm very happy with the way that turned out, and I'm glad that my kids are following in my footsteps, at least in terms of the way that they act and behave. If you've done that and you can honestly say to yourself, I'm really glad about that, boy, you've done a good job. And that's why I think Memorial Day is important.
Very well said, Carl. Good words. Appreciate that. We're going to go to another caller here that just called in. Noel is on the line. Noel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you today?
Good.
Good. And what's your question?
Okay, my question is, I got a benefit from my mother. She died about 10 years ago, and she worked for the post office. And I understand, I don't really understand this, that am I supposed to take a required distribution from this?
What sort of benefit was it? Was it an IRA or was it a cash distribution to you?
That was a IRA.
Okay. So when she passed away, do you know how old she was when she passed away?
Oh, gosh, I don't really know. I'm going to say she was maybe 64.
Oh, okay.
65.
Okay. And do you know how the IRA was titled into your name? Did you, it sounds like it's still in the IRA, correct? In other words, it would have been the estate of your mother for the benefit of Noel? Is that how it's titled?
It was as a benefit of Helen Alvarez. That's my mother's name.
Okay. Helen Alvarez for the benefit of Noel? Is that how it's currently titled?
No, it just says as a benefit of Helen Alvarez is what it says.
Okay.
I took the money and took it to Wells Fargo, and they put it in an IRA for me, I guess.
Okay. Well, it kind of sounds like you've done the stretch IRA. I think you'd want somebody to look at that closely to make sure that that's the case. In that situation, you probably should have been taking out small required distributions over the based on your life expectancy, which would have been pretty big, and so hopefully those amounts were pretty small. If you haven't been taking distributions out, you may want to have somebody look at that and determine the best course of action to correct that, and possibly file some back forms, possibly paying some penalties, a little bit of penalties if you haven't done that.
Yeah, kind of. It depends on, in part, I think, on how old you are. Because if you're 70 and a half, I guess you were started to have those required minimum distributions. So you wouldn't, you know, before that, it probably, you wouldn't have to take minimum ones. But when you get to 70 and a half, you got to start doing it.
Well, I think on the stretch IRA, you do have to start taking, even if you're under 70 and a half, if you've received somebody else's.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Yes,
whatever. Probably have to take,
Number of rules to consider, but you should probably have someone look at that to as soon as you kind of find out that there may be an issue there. The IRS can be lenient if there's a number of back years. And you know, what's the dollar amount of the IRA you're talking about?
It's about $7,000.
Oh, okay. So we're not talking too big of an amount, but
Well, what confuses me though is I took it to my bank about 10 years ago, and I asked about this. I thought that it should have been a required distribution at that time,
mm-hmm.
and nobody says anything, and they hee-haw it around. And it's been years now since I've had this, and now that I go to the bank, now they bring this up that I should take some out. I don't know. But then I went to my tax person and they said, no, I'm okay until I'm 70 and a half. I'm about 64 now. So I'm so confused. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you probably were required to take some very small distributions over the last 10 years, each year. If the IRS hasn't, you know, I guess if you haven't received any notices, the first thing to do is to figure out how much that is and at least take that amount out. Maybe you just want to liquidate the whole thing and be done with it and quietly move forward. That might be a good way. Probably should have somebody take a look at that and get you on the straight and narrow just so you don't have anything come nip you down the road if it stays open.
Well, just like I said, I'm so confused. It's like my bank tells me one thing, and then I took it to my tax person, which they had somebody else look at, and they charged me $100 for this. And I said, I was okay, I was fine until I'm 70 and a half. So now, am I fine? Am I not fine? Who do I talk to?
Well, if it's a qualified tax person and they've looked at all the details, potentially that's okay. I find it hard to believe that this IRA is truly, that you're truly the owner, and that it's not a stretch IRA since it came from your mother, which would typically require some distributions. But, you know, if it's a qualified person, just get a second opinion. That's what I would probably do. And that's probably a good place to start. And if two people say, hey, you're good, and the bank, well, they said you're probably not good. It doesn't sound like you're good to me, so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that I should have been taking some out, but then I took it to somebody else and they said I'm fine, so I don't know. Okay, I guess I'll just have to find somebody else to verify, I guess.
Yeah, that would be a good thing.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks for the call, Noel.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Very good.
And those things, the IRA rules are really tricky.
They are. And so the specific situation needs to be looked at,
yeah.
Run through the grid.
They're hard to know.
Yeah.
Always.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that legal question or that tax question answered now. Call Carl or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen and Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we're in our last segment of the show for this week. And again, if you have a question, be sure to call us sooner rather than later so that we have time to answer your question. 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. Got to look at that every time. Well, Carl, I thought I'd just follow up a little bit on your very good segment on Memorial Day. And I had the privilege this last month to visit Pearl Harbor with my dad, and we spent the whole day going through the various things that they have there, and had a chance to get a spot on the USS Arizona Memorial and go out there and see that. It's the first time I had seen it. It's the first time for my dad also, and you know, it really struck us. My dad made the comment that it was very good to see how many people were still coming out to pay respects. And this was on a windy, overcast, not a real nice day in their slow time. And yet it was still important to a lot of people. And that was noticeable. So that's a good thing, I think, that we still have some of that in our society. I'd like to see hopefully our younger generations coming up have that same respect. Nobody likes war. Nobody likes having to die for your country. But unfortunately, it is a necessary part to protect what is good and right and just. So that's a good thing that we take this time and remember those people that that gave their lives. My grandpa, my dad's dad, he served in the South Pacific during World War II as a bombardier navigator on a B-26 Martin Marauder based in on Henderson Field in Guadalcanal. Flew over 40 missions and got a Distinguished Flying Cross. So very grateful for the people that served, and it's worth taking some time and thinking about those things. So,
you know, Kevin, there are some things that are interesting. One of my uncles was he was killed in a B-25, which was the very close to what the B-26 is. The B-26 was a little newer and a little faster and a little better, but the B-25 was the one that General Doolittle used on the carriers, and they, I don't know how they ever got him off in the air. But you know, sometimes we wonder about the sacrifice that people make. And if you've ever put your, if you've ever gone to one of the air shows, or there are some places where there are, you know, ships of World War II vintage and things, and you can go tour them around, I can tell you that they made a lot of sacrifices. Then they went up and stuff that, you know, in airplanes that you think, oh my God, they're never going to get off the ground with these things. But one thing, just the other day, I had a lady who's a client of mine, and she was talking about her husband who served on submarines. And I mean, if you've ever been on a little on a like a World War II submarine, that's a sacrifice just going there. So I'm amazed that people could ever, you know, even think about doing that. I wouldn't have been one of the people on the submarine and under any case.
No, I hear you there. Well, we've got a caller, John. He's got a question on taxes on a farm. John, are you there?
Hello.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We are good. What's your question?
Well, my mom has been on a farm since 1957, and when she passes, I'm curious what type of tax I'm going to incur from the inheritance.
You want to take that, Carl?
Okay, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version. Probably, depending on the values and things, there's a good likelihood that you're going to have an estate tax. Okay, that's part of it. Anything over $1 million is going to be estate taxed here in Oregon.
Okay.
The other part that bothers me a little bit is that for one thing, well, one good thing is that you'll get a stepped up basis on the farm, so that the value that you take it at will be the value it is today. In other words, the fair market value of that farm today, which is good. However, I'm going to trade this one off to Kevin. There are, you know, farm exemptions and the like or deferrals, I guess you might say, on paying taxes if you're working it as a regular farm. And so if it's been used as a farm all of these years and you know, producing something, then I don't know all the rules on that, but maybe you do, Kevin, but that could end up in looking at some, you know, future taxes that are going to be much higher.
Basically, John, if she's the depending on how her estate is all set up, we'll say she's the only survivor, valuing her whole estate, what it's worth on the day she dies, if that's over $1 million, which most decent-sized farms plus other assets is, then you will have an Oregon 706, an Oregon estate tax return to file. You definitely want to hire somebody to do that one with your farm because of the natural resource credit. Oregon, as Carl alluded to, gives some deferrals and some benefits in how it's valued and how you pay the taxes on the timber, fishing farms, things in Oregon that can have a high value just because of the size of them, but aren't liquid. And they don't want you to necessarily lose those assets, but you do need to pay your fair share, they say. So that's where we're at. And generally, you're looking at 10%, 10 to 16% of the amount over $1 million is what Oregon's going to collect for inheritance tax.
Okay. Now, what about if she hasn't been farming the farm for the last 20 years?
Well, I don't think that would change anything with regard to the estate tax, other than, I mean, it might affect the value a little bit, but I don't think it would. But let's see. So if she hasn't been farming, well, it may mean that she didn't have deferrals, and in which case that would mean that if any kind of income tax that you had to pay or property tax that you had to pay would be the same, I would guess. But I'm not quite sure, depending on whether, you know, whether it's going to change character. Because like, for example, on a timber type thing, they'll have like a deferral of you know, tax. And if you change the character away from that, you know, you change it to such a extent that it changes that it's no longer a timber type thing, then they hit you with the, you know, the taxes that would have been paid had it been, you know, not timber all the time. So, yeah, that's one you want to bring in all of the documents regarding the estate and as many of the tax assessments, the statements that you get from the appraiser or the assessor. And bring that into your CPA and take a look at what that, you know, there may be some things that you can do to you know, to mitigate some of the taxes. And but you'd want to make a plan, I think, right now, is to take a look at it and say, okay, if you're planning to keep it, especially if you're planning to keep it, you want to figure out what this thing is and what could be done to, you know, spread it out or minimize it. But there probably will be some taxes of some sort.
Sure. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you, John. Very good question. Those are the questions we love to get and try to help steer you in the right direction. Carl, we are coming to the end of our show.
We are.
Yes. How does somebody reach you?
Well, they can reach me at 971-229-0585. and I'm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue in Suite 101, which is right next door to Chuck Price's office, suite number 103. And yep. we're directly behind the Elmer's restaurant at Mall 205.
That's right, that white
colonial. That white building. We're easy to find.
That's right.
And so you can feed your knowledge and your breakfast, too.
That's right. Chuck Price can be reached at 503-253-3000. And I am at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569. And we wish everybody a meaningful Memorial Day. We'll see you next week.
We do Investing Simplified. Financial Brew, wealth management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Do Investing Simplified.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.